Dear Shooter, we have speculated as to the state of the NRA, but we wanted to get the scoop straight from the source. Since we have three NRA board members available, let's ask them.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip on, it's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that, that isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
All right, and we're back. And now, Howard's got one last thing to get off his chest.
Yeah, before we talk about the state of the industry, one of the things that we talked about in our last meeting in the membership committee is why NRA numbers are dwindling. Ah. And one of the things we talked about is that people our age, I'm talking about Jeff and I.
Old guys.
Old guys.
But not really old
but
guys.
But not the oldest of the guys, right? Right. Is that when we joined the NRA, okay, we did that because we felt it was a sense of patriotism.
Yes.
Okay. We joined because we were patriots. Mm-hmm. Well, as we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, you know, and I'll say his name, ever since Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling during the national anthem and stuff like that. Well, then patriotism in our country has dwindled. I think we can all agree on that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And well, you're dealing with, okay, so, and I'm Gen X, so I'm right behind you guys. But you're dealing with two generations behind me that have been taught nothing but hate and discontent for their country.
That's correct. I mean, they took things like the Pledge of Allegiance out of school. They took prayer out of school.
Right.
Okay. They took civics, American history, and government. Now, when you talk about American history, it's all about how the white folks stole the land.
That's right.
But so there's not that sense of patriotism anymore. And with that, they don't feel that they need to join the NRA because they're not patriotic.
Well, let's get back to the NRA messaging. The NRA is the oldest civil rights organization in the United States.
No doubt. That is true.
Drive that point home.
Yes. So that is what needs to be driven home. That is the very reason the NRA existed, all right, is it's a civil rights organization. And one of the things that I want to, that I preach to people is the Second Amendment is not a second class right.
No.
It's right up there with every other right, okay? It's just as important as the First Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, you know, all the way down. The Second Amendment, which amendment do you have to have a permit for to exercise?
Exactly right.
It's the only one that we've allowed folks to infringe upon without due process.
Yeah.
And there's my favorite word right there, allow.
Allow.
That's right.
That's right.
Allow. We use it backwards. The idea that the government can allow us to have this gun, the government can allow us to carry in a certain place, the idea that they have the authority to allow us, no, we should never, ever use the word allow when we're talking about our rights, except what we allow the government to do to restrict our rights.
Right.
We allow the government. The government doesn't allow us.
So
we really need to get that straight. And it's one of my pet peeves.
Wait, it's also a pet peeve of mine.
Back to teaching civics.
Yes, back to teaching civics. Right. Because in the Constitution, our rights come from whom?
God. Our creator.
Our creator. Now. All right.
And I think
I'm going to get on my little religion soapbox for a minute, okay?
So your podcast just got hacked.
Oh, yeah, it's gone.
Because I'm just a born-again Baptist, okay? So anyway.
Then how come you didn't bring potato salad to dinner tonight?
I brought coleslaw. So anyway, the thing is, in the teaching, in taking God out of the schools, all right, and everything, now, and they don't teach that our rights are God-given, they now believe our rights are given by who?
The state.
The gate. The government. Okay? Wrong. So, that's it. I'm off my soapbox. We can now talk about the state of the industry.
Well, but actually, you're talking about patriotism, talking about civics, and talking about all this. It's kind of a perfect segue to the state of the industry right now. We're talking the state of the firearms industry, and in the last 2 years, it's rough.
It's rough compared to previously.
Well, and part of it is we've been living on this 20-year high.
Absolutely.
Yes, we have.
Record sales every month for the last 20 years straight.
Barack Obama was the greatest firearm salesperson in history.
Absolutely.
You just took the words out of my mouth.
No question.
Well, and he stood in front of a mic and says, I'm coming for him.
That's right.
He did.
That's right. And at the same time, said, no one wants to take away your guns.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, you guys. You're lying out of one side of your mouth or both.
Politician.
You're a politician. And so here we are. We're in what they're referring to as a Trump slump. And a Trump slump, it's real. And what it is our people don't think that there's a really high risk of them not being able to do what they want to do in the near future.
I think there's another component to that, though. Yes, you're right. They're not worried about Trump taking their guns away.
Right.
However, we go back to this record high that the firearms industry's been on for the last 20 years. People kind of have what they need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody that has been concerned about it, they've been buying it and hoarding it for the last 5, 10, 20 years.
We done accumulated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, because there's like 100 million gun owners in America and like over a billion rounds of ammo just in private homes.
Right.
But talking...
Half of that in
and
my garage.
I think... Yeah. I've
half
said
of that in my basement.
Yeah. I've said for years, probably in the neighborhood of 600 million firearms. It's not 400 million.
No,
it's not 500.
No.
I think 600 million plus.
Yeah, I would not.
Is where we are.
I would not argue that. I would say, you know, with 100 million gun owners, and I read something the other day that the average gun owner has 4.4 guns.
Those are rookie numbers. You guys got to step it up.
You got to pump those numbers up a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to say what I have in this forum, but it's a lot.
There's another component that we're not addressing yet.
What's that?
That.
Everything we do is discretional income.
That's right.
Yeah.
People right now, they don't have it.
A lot
they
of
don't.
It.
Wait. So
right.
you call it the Trump slump. I'm calling it the Biden slump because everybody's finally out of COVID money.
Yeah.
Gas is over $3 a gallon.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing. You're talking about Biden and COVID. When I had my gun store, I would have people, I mean, seriously, with, you know, rainbow stickers and Biden stickers on their cars wanting to know if I had a parking lot in the back so they could come and buy a gun and their friends not know they're there.
Which tells you which side of the aisle is violent.
That is correct. Oh, that's...
Absolutely.
You
want to
talk about that
totally
for a minute?
Afraid.
Sure.
Let's talk about what side of the aisle is violent.
I mean, we've beat it.
Have I hijacked your show?
Well,
maybe
a little.
But that's why we
that's
do
okay.
it here.
That's okay.
Because you know what? This allows me to like go get a drink. You guys just carry on. I will edit this later, and I'll probably call you and go, what the hell were you thinking?
I was thinking I was four bourbons deep.
Perfect. Continue on.
So let's just talk about the last 6 months, the number of shootings.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, there's no question.
There's no question. Who have they been conducted by?
Look, if liberals stop shooting people, gun crime violence would go down by 80%.
Well, by 80, I was going to say 90%.
In all fairness, we have our crazy fringe elements.
Well, all groups do.
That, oh, yeah. That they tie to us, which aren't shouldn't be tied to us in a lot of cases. Neo-Nazis are socialists.
Right.
The KKK was
Democrats.
For 100 years an arm of the Democratic Party.
Yep.
So, but they're termed as right-wing fringe. Okay. Well, if you
in the European sense, yes.
If you want to throw them in as the outlier fringe of the Republican Party, I'll let you do that if you buy in. The Republican Party is not controlled. The conservative Americans are not controlled or guided by the neo-Nazis, the KKK, the white supremacists, any of those groups. They do not drive the conservatives in America. On the other side, the Democrats are being driven, being run, being controlled by the Communist Party.
You're exactly it is right.
Absolute flat out communism.
This entire yep. government shutdown is caused because Chuckie Schumer is terrified of being primaried by AOC of all people.
You've got that right.
And socialism, as we all know, is just a nice name for communism.
Exactly. You know, I saw a quote, and it was that, you know, conservatives let's say conservatives, Republicans, whatever, we talk about guns as tools for hunting and for sports shooting and for self-defense because that's what we use them for.
Yep.
Liberals classify guns as tools to kill people because that's what they use them for.
Right. I used to get a little upset about the people who demanded that we refer to our firearms as weapons. You know, the military mindset that it's a weapon. Well, I grew up in a house with a whole bunch of guns. My dad was a gun writer. We had a room that was dedicated to guns, that had guns down every wall, that had drawers full of pistols. And there were only two or three out of the entire 120 plus guns that were in my house growing up that we considered weapons. That was my mom's .38 that she carried around a lot.
For self-protection.
And the .357 in my dad's console of his truck most of the time. Those, their intention was to be used as weapons. They were acquired as weapons. The .38 that dad gave my grandmother for Mother's Day, my mom's mom, was considered a weapon. But all the rest, they were just guns. They were tools. Mm-hmm. The idea of using them as a weapon, it only becomes a weapon when that's the object. And that was never the object.
No, another term that gets me is weapons of war.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I
have a 1898 Craig Jorgensen. Guess what? That's a weapon of war.
That was a weapon of war.
Spanish-American War.
Exactly.
Yep. And it was manufactured mm-hmm. specifically for that war. It's in my gun cabinet. Yeah. It's a bolt action.
Well, that bolt action rifle that was used to kill Charlie Kirk.
It was a Mauser.
It was a Mauser.
Mauser. World War One.
One.
World
vintage,
War
yes.
One vintage Mauser. And, you know, what was the next one? Was a Springfield. 03 Springfield. 1903
yep. yeah.
Springfield rifle.
World War One sniper rifle.
Yep. So all of this, it's just nonsense.
And
we need to keep in mind that of all of the murders committed in the United States in any given year, about 2% are committed using a rifle of any type.
Right.
So all of this assault rifle nonsense, it's just a matter of, as Josh Sugarman of the Violence Policy Center so eloquently stated in his book, the mistaken, and I can't quote it, but what he put forward was that people don't know the difference between an M16 and an AR-15. They don't know the difference between a semi-auto rifle and a full auto machine gun. And so we're going to take advantage of that ignorance. And the scarier it looks, the easier it is for us to push. And well, and that's where we are.
And make no mistake, these people that push the gun control, and we sit there and we laugh at them because they don't understand terminology and they don't understand gun function. And they, well, it's an assault weapon. It's a weapon of war. And we laugh at them because we're like, you have no freaking clue what you're talking about. The problem is they do, but they lie. And we got to go back to the KGB talking about the useful idiots. The people that they are appealing to, they know are that dumb. But these people are not. So we have to not underestimate, and I will call them the enemy.
Well, we were talking about how, which side was really more violent. And in recent years, a good friend of ours, Michael Bain, got it right. We have watched the other side chum for monsters. They propose and propagate rhetoric, demonizing, dehumanizing the other side to a point of acceptable violence to an extreme nature. And we've talked about this 100 times on the podcast.
Right.
Their side has a volume knob. They can ratchet it up and ratchet it down at will. Our side, it's a switch. And we're terrified to flip that switch. Because once we do, you can't pull that dog back.
No. Nope.
No.
And I think both of you guys being military, I think you will understand this. You know, the dehumanizing aspect of the rhetoric. You know, when you're trained, when you're in boot camp, and when you're being trained, what do they do? They use little silhouette targets, so you don't see it as people.
Right.
And that's what the left has been doing for a decade.
Right.
Actually, longer than that. I think this goes back to the swatting of Andrew Breitbart.
Well, it's always been a tenet of in the military to refer to the enemy as the enemy,
right?
Not as those people on the other side,
right?
And that's just natural, but they have been doing that to us. They have been, in their terms, othering.
Yes.
Us.
Yes.
For decades, and it's coming home to roost. And recent polls have shown that, what is it? Something like 63% to 74% of Democrats believe that violence is the answer.
Well,
is justifiable.
Yeah.
Where among Republicans or conservatives, that number is down in the 15 to 30%, depending on where you look at the polls.
Well, a lot of that started, if you remember, in 2016 when Trump got elected the first time. That's when the name calling started.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Nazi.
You're a Nazi and you're a fascist. And after all this time, after, you know, 10 years, after hearing you're a Nazi, you're a fascist, which they cannot define what a Nazi or a fascist is.
Well, they can't. They don't even understand gender.
No, you know. But after the name calling for 10 years, now it's like, yes, if you're on the right's conservative side, then you're a Nazi. And they're at the point now where, you know, they think, you know, like Antifa, it's fine to kill the fascist.
Right.
And they look at us as the fascist, even though they cannot define what a fascist is. And the same with Nazis, you know.
It wasn't that long ago.
No, but I think...
Read a history book.
Right, but
no
I think...
They have no idea what those names mean.
They don't.
No,
but
they
But I think it comes down to the absolute delusion that a lot of these people are under. I mean, it goes back...
That is
the delusion. Let's talk about the transgender aspect of this. Like, people that actually believe that, you know, I'm the wrong gender or this or that, or, I'm a cat. I mean, how deluded do you have to be? I'm sorry. It's mental delusion, so it's not that hard to push somebody that much further.
Absolutely. If a guy wants, for whatever reason, if a guy wants to be a gal, power to him.
Right.
You know, go for it. That's okay. But, and... if you can fool me, okay, have at it. That's fine. I will be polite, always have been. I have some very good friends who are transgender.
Well, yeah, if you want to be that way, I don't care.
Right. It's
however, if you want to pretend you're a cat or a dog or whatever, there's a test for that.
There is a test. There
can
is
you
a
lick
test.
Your butt? Because if you can, all right, fine. You can have that litter box in the hallway.
Here's the way I
don't even
want to
go there.
And I know that we're getting off.
You know what?
Here,
it's okay.
But you know, y'all remember the old iconic Pizza Hut buildings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we still have one.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, when you have the old Pizza Hut buildings, right, it might be a bank now. It might be a Mexican restaurant. It can be a place where you go get your nails done. No matter how they painted it, no matter how they looked at it, when you look at that building, you will always go, that's a Pizza
Hut. It's a landmark.
It's a... Yeah,
the A&W
you will know.
And Casper.
You will know originally what that was.
Yep,
turn there, it to Pizza Hut.
I don't care what it is.
There's
always
an old A&W in Casper, Wyoming.
And I just made Jeff Knox kind of silent there. I didn't mean to go there that bad, but I mean, there's a test, right? Either you can or you can't, and if you can, more power to you.
I've had it. I've had it. I don't. Yeah, I'm leaving that one completely alone. I really am.
Do we want to get back on the state of the industry?
Yeah, let's talk about state of the industry.
Or do we just want to keep this as a comical little podcast?
Well, this is...
The state of the industry right now, there's a couple of things that are going on. We're seeing more ammunition manufactured in the United States. We're seeing, hopefully, more powder and primers being manufactured in the United States. I think it's critical to our defense posture to have that capability in the United States.
Delusional.
Ooh.
Kiss my grits.
Nitrocellulose is wholly owned and made out of China. Without that, you don't have gunpowder as we know it today. And so all your manufacturers and your gunpowder manufacturers that are cropping up, they are wishing and hoping on a supply chain that's never going to be there in the next 5 years.
Now, hold on. Nitrocellulose is exclusive to China?
It's the only place it comes from.
Now, what about the Russian powder companies?
China.
Norwegian powder companies? Australian powder companies? I'm going to have to talk with Chris Hodgson about this.
Please do.
Yeah. I'm going to have a conversation with Chris about this.
We are headed for a powder shortage, my friend, because of politics.
All right.
And by the way, you're saying China wrong. It's China.
China.
Accent aside, you guys are all hearing me communicate.
All right. Well, that's an interesting little tidbit, I was not aware of that. I knew that, well, Hodgson gets most of their powders from Norway, Denmark, someplace up north there.
Ask why.
I will talk with Chris about that.
Because also manufacturing it here is a huge EPA and OSHA risk.
Oh, yeah. And this is one of the challenges. And I was just talking with my wife, Janet, about this on our drive up here, mm-hmm. is nuclear. That one of the reasons that we don't have nuclear power, more nuclear power in the United States, is that a $1 billion nuclear power plant costs $12 billion to build because there are $11 billion of lawsuits and regulations and red tape that they have to go through in order to get that plant approved. And that plant has to be an outdated old model plant because they won't let them do anything that hasn't been proven to be effective already.
Now, I would challenge you on that because Bill, Bill Gates is building one as we speak, 200 miles from my home.
Cameron, Wyoming. Now, you're right. The technology they're putting in place is outdated because it's reliable and they've never had a problem. But there's another facet to that conversation from an economic standpoint.
Okay.
The political environment we find ourselves in, the security force to make that facility run is $100 million annual budget.
Why does it require that level of security force?
Because if somebody wishes us ill, and they find a way to gain access to the facility. Depleted uranium, when it has a meltdown, will wipe out the Western United States.
Except the newer technologies...
Doesn't matter.
...are not... they are not at the same level as the old technologies.
Correct.
You can't make plutonium out of...
No, but you can melt down and have a dirty bomb.
We can get into the weeds on this.
I sleep with a uranium geologist pretty much all the time. I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, you say that Jamie knows stuff, but I don't know.
I'm going to corner you and her together, and we'll talk. But at the end of the day, the political environment, the security force, is a budget item.
Right.
They're expensive.
It, of course, it has to be.
And the local sheriffs are having a hard time with it because they're going to have way more training, way more capabilities than the local guys are going to have.
And they'll be three times the size
of the local sheriffs.
So let's rotate the National Guard in and out of the
nuclear facilities. Now you've got a governor control getting involved, and that's more politics.
Yeah.
This thing gets really layered up with complexity real fast.
Of course it does.
And it's all about money.
Yeah, absolutely. It always comes
down. It always
comes down to money. So uranium power is nothing more than a fancy steam engine.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And the byproduct of the nuclear process is not good for humans. It's just not.
No. It's not.
But if it's controlled and managed right, it's very safe.
Right.
It's very reliable.
A lot of the newer processes, which are challenging, but they can consume a lot of what is considered waste product from the older technology.
Right. Right.
Which then brings in the question, where's the power go?
Which power from where?
Well, it's an electricity plant, right?
Right.
Yeah. Where does it go?
Well, it goes wherever it's needed.
Wherever it's bought.
Wherever
it's bought. Nowhere is needed.
Yeah, because it's all of everything that this plant will produce will go to California.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Every last stitch.
And it's still not going to be.
California's closing their nuclear plants.
Yeah, I know.
They're idiots.
Because they think that wind and solar and unicorn farts will power their dreams.
He just made my case for me.
That's right. I did. No, actually, I have a case study in this. Mm-hmm. A Alcoa aluminum rolling plant in Spokane, Washington, went on strike for spurious reasons. Stayed on strike for 2 years.
Oh, gosh.
Until finally Alcoa said, screw it. They built a plant in Chile or someplace like that and moved 90% of the facility down there. Meanwhile, Washington Water Power, that was locked in to a contract to power the electric smelters of the Alcoa plant, suddenly had all of that excess electricity that they were able to sell to California. The grid had just gone on board. I firmly believe that the union that represented the Alcoa workers at that plant screwed them over big time, convinced them to stay on strike for 2 years more, and caused the shutdown of that plant to allow Washington Water Power to sell down to California. It's just a theory. I can't back it up, but from observation of what was going on up there at the time, I think that the union screwed those guys. And
I think the unions just screw their guys anymore.
Take a look at who got paid.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly they could sell that electricity for five times what they were selling it to Alcoa for, and they could put it on the new grid that allowed that to transfer down to California. And of course, the people of Spokane were promised that their electricity rates wouldn't go up more than 2% per year, which it has done for the last 20 years.
And a politician's promise is what?
A what?
Yeah. All right. So I got you guys for about five more minutes.
Somebody pass gas?
Well, that causes global warming, you know.
But that's true.
All right. So I got you guys for like five more minutes. Let's bring this back. 50,000.
Are we talking guns?
We are. This is a gun podcast, believe it or not. So give me your 50,000-foot view. Current state of the industry. Where are we headed? Give me the next 12 months.
Oh, 12 months is too short a time.
It's, yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's microscopic. Okay.
All right.
And so, dismal, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I agree with that.
But that's... Give me something bite-sized, because you can talk to somebody about projections, and I give you a 10-year projection. As a business person, you're going to grasp that.
I do.
As a lowly listener in my mom's basement, I can't grasp that. Help me out here.
For me, it, in the microcosm of it all, it's about economics 101. Everything we do is disposable income.
Right.
And until we get to a place in the country where people have disposable income again, whether it's gas, groceries, whatever, the money's not going to be allocated to the recreational side of things. It's just not. Mm-hmm. It's economics 101. And I see that being a five-year projection before it starts to take a turn.
Okay.
I really feel that Trump and company made a mistake with the tariff thing. I think that...
don't get me started about tariffs.
I think that...
We're talking about guns.
They're related.
Sadly.
I think that that if you're going to do the tariff thing, that he needed to first open up all of the... what do they call it? The crescent. Get all of Asia on board with... low tariffs, and then slam the Chinese with high tariffs and build. Well, as a for instance, Europe is getting still to this day a large percentage of their natural gas from Russia.
From Russia.
While they're in a tacit war with Russia, and the United States could solve that by simply generating huge amounts of natural gas and sending it to Europe at a really good price and undercutting the Russians. Same in India. India is supplying the Russians with finances by buying their oil. Well, we need to undercut that. That's the solution there. Tariffs on everybody isn't a solution. Yes, it's made us some money, but it's not targeted properly, in my opinion. And as far as the firearms industry is concerned and the outlook for the near future, I think that small players are going to play a big role. I think that medium players are in trouble, because the small guys who are doing it out of their basement, the guys who are putting together innovative, creative stuff, and that's what we're here for,
right?
Is small, innovative, creative stuff that we all want. That's cool. I want to see that. I want to use that. I want that, you know, I want to write about that. I want to tell people about this stuff. Those companies, those innovative companies, they're going to go somewhere. The middle guys, the big guys, they've got the bucks that they can hold out. They can weather the storm. They can, you know, throw and put it in a different color and put it out again and call it
right?
A new model.
That's not a new model. Color is not a new model.
Yeah. And, but it's those middle guys, those middle manufacturers who built up during the boom times that are going to be really challenged going forward. And so, you know, I'm very big on entrepreneurs. I'm very big on innovation. And the old companies aren't innovating right now for the most part. I think that the Ruger Magpul meld for whatever they call that gun, I think that's a gem. I think that that's great. I predicted 20 years ago that modular firearm mechanisms in cheap plastic frames was where the future of handguns was and going.
You'll be very happy to know I have one here.
They're moving forward with that. That's finally coming true 20 years later. But yeah, that's where I see it, is I think that we're going to struggle for the next few years, hopefully for the next 8 to 12 years or more, and because people aren't afraid as they were, although the Democrats keep trying to gin up that fear, they keep trying to do things to make us more worried, and I wish they would stop, but I don't see that they're going to.
They won't, because they're effective at it.
Yeah.
They won't.
It's what they know how to do and what they do well. But anyway, that's where I think we are right now, state of the industry. And it comes to you, Howie.
All right. So as we talk about the state of the industry, sometimes we talk about how it looks nationwide. But in Colorado, I can tell you that background checks since Senate Bill 003 was passed, the background checks that have been reported by CBI are through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
I will tell you, Jared Polis and his little lackey, Tom Sullivan, are two of the greatest gun salesmen in the state, because since they passed that, basically the semi-auto ban, yep, or what we call Polis's permission slip, to buy a semi-automatic gun with a detachable magazine, gun sales of those particular type of firearms have gone through the roof. So when we talk about the state of the industry, how it's down here and it's down there, I can tell you that gun sales in Colorado are not hurting.
Well, everybody in Colorado is rich anyway, so.
That's right. Just look at me. I drive a Raptor.
That's right.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
All right. And we're back. And now, Howard's got one last thing to get off his chest.
Yeah, before we talk about the state of the industry, one of the things that we talked about in our last meeting in the membership committee is why NRA numbers are dwindling. Ah. And one of the things we talked about is that people our age, I'm talking about Jeff and I.
Old guys.
Know, old guys. When we, well, old
but
guys.
But not really old
but
guys.
But not the oldest of the guys, right? Right. Is that when we joined the NRA, okay, we did that because we felt it was a sense of patriotism.
Yes.
Okay. We joined because we were patriots. Mm-hmm. Well, as we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, you know, and I'll say his name, ever since Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling during the national anthem and stuff like that. Well, then patriotism in our country has dwindled. I think we can all agree on that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And well, you're dealing with, okay, so, and I'm Gen X, so I'm right behind you guys. But you're dealing with two generations behind me that have been taught nothing but hate and discontent for their country.
That's correct. I mean, they took things like the Pledge of Allegiance out of school. They took prayer out of school.
Right.
Okay. They took civics, American history, and government. Now, when you talk about American history, it's all about how the white folks stole the land.
That's right.
But so there's not that sense of patriotism anymore. And with that, they don't feel that they need to join the NRA because they're not patriotic.
Well, let's get back to the NRA messaging. The NRA is the oldest civil rights organization in the United States.
No doubt. That is true.
Drive that point home.
Yes. So that is what needs to be driven home. That is the very reason the NRA existed, all right, is it's a civil rights organization. And one of the things that I want to, that I preach to people is the Second Amendment is not a second class right.
No.
It's right up there with every other right, okay? It's just as important as the First Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, you know, all the way down. The Second Amendment, which amendment do you have to have a permit for to exercise?
Exactly right.
It's the only one that we've allowed folks to infringe upon without due process.
Yeah.
And there's my favorite word right there, allow.
Allow.
That's right.
That's right.
Allow. We use it backwards. The idea that the government can allow us to have this gun, the government can allow us to carry in a certain place, the idea that they have the authority to allow us, no, we should never use the word allow when we're talking about our rights, except what we allow the government to do to restrict our rights.
Right.
We allow the government. The government doesn't allow us.
So,
and we really need to get that straight. It's one of my pet peeves.
It's also a pet peeve of mine.
Back to teaching civics.
Yes, back to teaching civics.
Right.
Because in the Constitution, our rights come from whom?
God.
Our creator. Now. All right.
And I think
I'm going to get on my little religion soapbox for a minute, okay?
So your podcast just got hacked.
Oh, yeah, it's gone.
Because I'm just a born-again Baptist, okay? So anyway.
Then how come preach you didn't it, bring brother. Potato salad to dinner tonight?
I brought coleslaw. So anyway, the thing is, in the teaching, in taking God out of the schools, all right, and everything, now, and they don't teach that our rights are God-given, they now believe our rights are given by who?
The state.
The gate. The government. Okay? Wrong. So, that's it. I'm off my soapbox. We can now talk about the state of the industry.
Well, but it actually, you're talking about patriotism, talking about civics, and talking about all this, is kind of a perfect segue to the state of the industry right now. We're talking the state of the firearms industry, and in the last 2 years, it's rough.
It's rough compared to previously.
Well, and part of it is we've been living on this 20-year high.
Absolutely.
Yes, we have.
Record sales every month for the last 20 years straight.
Barack Obama was the greatest firearm salesperson in history.
Absolutely.
You just took the words out of my mouth.
No question.
Well, and he stood in front of a mic and says, I'm coming for him.
That's right.
He did.
That's right. And at the same time, said, no one wants to take away your guns.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, you guys. You're lying out of one side of your mouth or both.
Politician.
You're a politician. And so here we are. We're in what they're referring to as a Trump slump. And a Trump slump, it's real. And what it is our people don't think that there's a really high risk of them not being able to do what they want to do in the near future.
I think there's another component to that, though. Yes, you're right. They're not worried about Trump taking their guns away.
Right.
However, we go back to this record high that the firearms industry's been on for the last 20 years. People kind of have what they need. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody that has been concerned about it, they've been buying it and hoarding it for the last 5, 10, 20 years.
We done accumulated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, because there's like 100 million gun owners in America and like over a billion rounds of ammo just in private homes.
Right.
But talking...
Half of that in my
garage. And I think...
Yeah.
I've
half
said
of that in my basement.
Yeah. I've said for years, probably in the neighborhood of 600 million firearms. It's not 400 million.
No,
it's not 500.
No.
I think 600 million plus.
Yeah, I would not.
Is where we are.
I would not argue that. I would say, you know, with 100 million gun owners, and I read something the other day that the average gun owner has 4.4 guns.
Those are rookie numbers. You guys got to step it up.
You got to pump those numbers up a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to say what I have in this forum, but it's a lot.
There's another component that we're not addressing yet.
What's that?
That.
Everything we do is discretional income.
That's right.
Yeah.
People right now, they don't have
a lot.
They don't.
Wait.
So you call it the Trump slump. I'm calling it the Biden slump because everybody's finally out of COVID money.
Yeah.
Gas is over $3 a gallon.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing. You're talking about Biden and COVID. When I had my gun store, I would have people, I mean, seriously, with, you know, rainbow stickers and Biden stickers on their cars wanting to know if I had a parking lot in the back so they could come and buy a gun and their friends not know they're there.
Which tells you which side of the aisle is violent.
That is correct. Oh, that's...
Absolutely.
You want to talk about that
totally
for a minute?
Afraid.
Sure.
Let's talk about what side of the aisle is violent.
I mean, we've beat it. We've
Have
beat
I hijacked technology. Your show?
Well,
maybe
a little.
A little, but that's why we
that's
do
okay.
it here.
That's okay.
Because you know what? This allows me to like go get a drink. You guys just carry on. I will edit this later, and I'll probably call you and go, what the hell were you thinking?
I was thinking I was four bourbons deep.
Perfect. Continue on.
So let's just talk about the last 6 months, the number of shootings.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, there's no question.
There's no question. Who have they been conducted by?
Look, if liberals stop shooting people, gun crime violence would go down by 80.
Well, about 80. I was going to say 90%. Yeah, 88, 90%.
In all fairness, we have our crazy fringe elements.
Well, all groups do.
That they tie to us, which shouldn't be tied to us in a lot of cases. Neo-Nazis are socialists.
Right.
The KKK was
Democrats.
For 100 years an arm of the Democratic Party.
Yep.
But they're termed as right-wing fringe. Okay. Well, if you
in the European sense, yes.
If you want to throw them in as the outlier fringe of the Republican Party, I'll let you do that if you buy in. The Republican Party is not controlled. The conservative Americans are not controlled or guided by the neo-Nazis, the KKK, the white supremacists, any of those groups. They do not drive the conservatives in America. On the other side, the Democrats are being driven, being run, being controlled by the Communist Party.
You're exactly
it is
right.
Absolute flat out communist.
This entire government shutdown is caused because Chuckie Schumer is terrified of being primaried by AOC of all people.
You've got that right.
And socialism, as we all know, is just a nice name for communism.
Exactly. You know, I saw a quote, and it was that, you know, conservatives let's say conservatives, Republicans, whatever, we talk about guns as tools for hunting and for sports shooting and for self-defense because that's what we use them for.
Yep.
Liberals classify guns as tools to kill people because that's what they use them for.
Right. I used to get a little upset about the people who demanded that we refer to our firearms as weapons. You know, the military mindset that it's a weapon. Well, I grew up in a house with a whole bunch of guns. My dad was a gun writer. We had a room that was dedicated to guns, that had guns down every wall, that had drawers full of pistols. And there were only two or three out of the entire 100, 20 plus guns that were in my house growing up that we considered weapons. That was my mom's 38 that she carried around a lot.
For self-protection.
And the 357 in my dad's console of his truck most of the time. Those, their intention was to be used as weapons. They were acquired as weapons. The 38 that dad gave my grandmother for Mother's Day, my mom's mom, was considered a weapon. But all the rest, they were just guns. They were tools. Mm-hmm. The idea of using them as a weapon, it only becomes a weapon when that's the object. And that was never the object.
No, another term that gets me is weapons of war.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And you know what?
I have a 1898 Craig Jorgensen. Guess what? That's a weapon of war.
That was a weapon of war.
Spanish-American War.
Exactly. Yep.
And it was manufactured specifically for that war. It's in my gun cabinet. Yeah. It's a bolt action.
Well, that bolt action rifle that was used to kill Charlie Kirk.
It was a Mauser.
Mauser. World War One vintage Mauser. What was the next one? Was a Springfield. 03 Springfield. 1903 yep.
yeah.
Springfield rifle.
World War One sniper rifle.
Yep. So all of this, it's just nonsense.
And
we need to keep in mind that of all of the murders committed in the United States in any given year, about 2% are committed using a rifle of any type.
Right.
So all of this assault rifle nonsense, it's just a matter of, as Josh Sugarman of the Violence Policy Center so eloquently stated in his book, the mistaken, and I can't quote it, but what he put forward was that people don't know the difference between an M16 and an AR-15. They don't know the difference between a semi-auto rifle and a full auto machine gun. And so we're going to take advantage of that ignorance, and the scarier it looks, the easier it is for us to push, and that's where we are.
And make no mistake, these people that push the gun control, and we sit there and we laugh at them because they don't understand terminology and they don't understand gun function, and it's an assault weapon, it's a weapon of war. And we laugh at them because we're like, you have no freaking clue what you're talking about. The problem is they do, but they lie. And we got to go back to the KGB talking about the useful idiots. The people that they are appealing to, they know are that dumb. But these people are not. So we have to not underestimate, and I will call them the enemy.
Well, we were talking about how, which side was really more violent. Hmm. And in recent years, a good friend of ours, Michael Bain, got it right. We have watched the other side chum for monsters. Mm-hmm. They propose and propagate rhetoric, demonizing, dehumanizing the other side to a point of acceptable violence to an extreme nature. And we've talked about this 100 times on the podcast.
Right.
Their side has a volume knob. They can ratchet it up and ratchet it down at will. Our side, it's a switch. And we are terrified to flip that switch. Because once we do, you can't pull that dog back.
No.
Nope.
No.
And I think both of you guys being military, I think you will understand this. The dehumanizing aspect of the rhetoric. You know, when you're trained, when you're in boot camp, and when you're being trained, what do they do? They use little silhouette targets, so you don't see it as people.
Right.
And that's what the left has been doing for a decade.
Right.
Actually, longer than that. I think this goes back to the swatting of Andrew Breitbart.
Hmm. Well, it's always been a tenet of in the military to refer to the enemy as the enemy,
right?
Not as those people on the other side,
right?
And that's just natural. But they have been doing that to us. They have been, in their terms, othering us for decades. And it's coming home to roost. And recent polls have shown that, what is it, something like 63% to 74% of Democrats believe that violence is the answer.
Well,
is justifiable.
Yeah, justified. Yeah.
Where among Republicans or conservatives, that number is down in the 15 to 30% depending on where you look at the polls.
Well, a lot of that started, if you remember, in 2016 when Trump got elected the first time. That's when the name-calling started.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Nazi.
You're a Nazi and you're a fascist. And after all this time, after, 10 years, after hearing you're a Nazi, you're a fascist, which they cannot define what a Nazi
can't.
Or a fascist
is. Well, they
is.
Can't. They don't even understand gender.
No. But after the name-calling for 10 years, now it's like, yes, if you're on the right's conservative side, then you're a Nazi. And they're at the point now where, they think, like Antifa, it's fine to kill the fascist.
Right.
And they look at us as the fascist, even though they cannot define what a fascist is. And the same with Nazis,
It wasn't that long ago.
No, but I think.
Read a history book.
Right, but
no
I think.
No idea
well,
what those names mean.
They don't, but I think it comes down to the absolute delusion that a lot of these people are under. I mean, it goes back.
That is
let's,
the
let's
delusion.
Let's talk about the transgender aspect of this. Like, people that actually believe that, I'm the wrong gender or this or that, or, I'm a cat. I mean, how deluded do you have to be? I'm sorry. It's mental delusion, so it's not that hard to push somebody that much further.
Absolutely. If a guy wants, for whatever reason, if a guy wants to be a gal, power to him.
Right.
Go for it. That's okay. But, and if you can fool me, okay, have at it. That's fine. I will be polite. Always have been. I have some very good friends who are transgender.
Well, yeah, if you want to be that way, I don't care.
Right. It's...
However, if you want to pretend you're a cat or a dog or whatever, there's a test for that.
There is a test. There
can
is
you
a
lick
test.
Your butt? Because if you can, all right, fine. You can have that litter box in the hallway.
Here's the way
I don't even
want
to go there.
And I know that we're getting off
subject. You know what?
Here,
it's okay.
But y'all remember the old iconic Pizza Hut buildings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we still have one.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, when you have the old Pizza Hut buildings, right, it might be a bank now. It might be a Mexican restaurant. It can be a place where you go get your nails done. No matter how they painted it, no matter how they looked at it, when you look at that building, you will always go, that's a Pizza Hut.
It's a landmark.
It's a yeah.
The A&W
you will know,
and Casper.
You will know originally what that was.
Yep,
turn it to Pizza Hut.
I don't care what it is.
There's
always
an old A&W in Casper, Wyoming.
And I just made Jeff Knox kind of silent there. I didn't mean to go there that bad, but I mean, there's a test, right? Either you can or you can't, and if you can, more power to you.
I've had it. I've had it. I'm leaving that one completely alone. I really am.
Do we want to get back on the state of the industry?
Yeah, let's talk about state of the industry.
Or do we just want to keep this as a comical little podcast?
Well, this is...
The state of the industry right now, there's a couple of things that are going on. We're seeing more ammunition manufactured in the United States. We're seeing, hopefully, more powder and primers being manufactured in the United States. I think it's critical to our defense posture to have that capability in the United States.
Delusional.
Ooh.
Kiss my grits.
Nitrocellulose is wholly owned and made out of China. Without that, you don't have gunpowder as we know it today. And so all your manufacturers and your gunpowder manufacturers that are cropping up, they are wishing and hoping on a supply chain that's never going to be there in the next 5 years.
Now, hold on. Nitrocellulose is exclusive to China?
It's the only place it comes from.
Now, What about the Russian powder companies?
China.
Norwegian power companies? Australian powder companies? I'm going to have to talk with Chris Hodgson about this.
Please do.
Yeah. I'm going to have a conversation with Chris about this.
We are headed for a powder shortage, my friend, because of politics.
All right.
And by the way, you're saying China wrong. It's China.
China.
Accent aside, you guys are all hearing me communicate.
All right. Well, that's an interesting little tidbit, I was not aware of that. I knew that, well, Hodgson gets most of their powders from Norway, Denmark, someplace up north there.
Ask why.
I will talk with Chris about that.
Because also manufacturing it here is a huge EPA and OSHA risk.
Oh, yeah. And this is one of the challenges. And I was just talking with my wife, Janet, about this on our drive up here, is nuclear. That one of the reasons that we don't have nuclear power, more nuclear power in the United States, is that a $1 billion nuclear power plant costs $12 billion to build because there are $11 billion of lawsuits and regulations and red tape that they have to go through in order to get that plant approved. And that plant has to be an outdated old model plant because they won't let them do anything that hasn't been proven to be effective already.
Now, I would challenge you on that because Bill Gates is building one as we speak, 200 miles from my home.
Cameron, Wyoming. Now, you're right. The technology they're putting in place is outdated because it's reliable and they've never had a problem. But there's another facet to that conversation from an economic standpoint.
Okay.
The political environment we find ourselves in, the security force to make that facility run is $100 million annual budget.
Why does it require that level of security force?
Because if somebody wishes us ill, and they find a way to gain access to the facility, depleted uranium, when it has a meltdown, will wipe out the Western United States.
Except the newer technologies...
Doesn't matter.
...are not... They are not at the same level as the old technologies.
Correct.
You can't make plutonium out of...
No, but you can melt down and have a dirty bomb.
We can get into the weeds on this.
I sleep with a uranium geologist pretty much all the time. I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, you say that Jamie knows stuff, but I don't know.
I'm going to corner you and her together, and we'll talk. But at the end of the day, the political environment, the security force is a budget item.
Right.
They're expensive.
Of course, it has to be.
And the local sheriffs are having a hard time with it because... they're going to have way more training, way more capabilities than the local guys are going to have.
And they'll be three times the size
of the local
sheriff's
department.
So let's rotate the National Guard in and out of the
nuclear facilities. Now you got a governor control getting involved, and that's more politics.
Yeah.
This thing gets really layered up with complexity.
Of course it
real
does.
Real fast.
Of course it does.
And it's all about money.
Yeah, absolutely. It always comes,
it always
is. Comes down to money. So uranium... power is nothing more than a fancy steam engine.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And the byproduct of the nuclear process is not good for humans. It's just not.
No, it's not.
But if it's controlled and managed right, it's very safe.
Right.
It's very reliable.
A lot of the newer processes, which are challenging, but they can consume a lot of what is considered waste product from the older technology.
Right, right.
Which then brings in the question, where's the power go?
Which power from where?
Well, it's an electricity plant, right?
Right.
Yeah. Where does it go?
Well, it goes wherever it's needed.
Wherever it's bought.
Wherever
it's not where it's needed.
Yeah, because it's all of everything that we're everything that this plant will produce will go to California.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Every last stitch.
And it's still not going to be enough.
California's closing their nuclear plants.
I know.
Because they're idiots.
Because they think that wind and solar and unicorn farts will power their dreams.
He just made my case for me.
That's right. That's right. I did. No, actually, I have a case study in this. Mm-hmm. Alcoa aluminum rolling plant
in
Spokane, Washington, mm-hmm. went on strike for spurious reasons, stayed on strike for 2 years.
Oh, gosh.
Until finally Alcoa said, screw it. They built a plant in Chile or someplace like that and moved 90% of the facility down mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Washington Water Power, that was locked in to a contract to power the electric smelters mm-hmm. Of the Alcoa plant, suddenly had all of that excess electricity that they were able to sell to California. The grid had just gone on board. I firmly believe that the union that represented the Alcoa workers at that plant screwed them over big time, convince them to stay on strike for 2 years more, and caused the shutdown of that plant to allow Washington Water Power to sell down to California. It's just a theory. I can't back it up, but from observation of what was going on up there at the time, I think that the union screwed those guys. And
I think the unions just screw their guys anymore.
Take a look at who got paid.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly they could sell that electricity for five times what they were selling it to Alcoa for, and they could put it on the new grid that allowed that to transfer down to California. And of course, the people of Spokane were promised that their electricity rates wouldn't go up more than. 2% per year, which it has done for the last 20 years.
And a politician's promise is what?
A what?
Yeah. All right. So I got you guys for
Did
about five more
pass
minutes.
Gas?
Well, that causes global warming, you know.
But that's true.
All right. So I got you guys for like five more minutes. Let's bring this back. 50,000.
Are we talking guns?
We are. This is a gun podcast, believe it or not. So give me your 50,000-foot view. Current state of the industry. Where are we headed? Give me the next 12 months.
Oh, 12 months is too short a time.
It is.
Yeah, that's microscopic. Okay.
All right.
And so, dismal, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I agree with that.
But that's... Give me something bite-sized, because you can talk to somebody about projections, and I give you a 10-year projection. As a business person, you're going to grasp that.
I do.
As a lowly listener in my mom's basement, I can't grasp that. Help me out here.
For me, it, in the microcosm of it all, it's about economics 101. Everything we do is disposable income.
Right.
And until we get to a place in the country where people have disposable income again, whether it's gas, groceries, whatever, the money's not going to be allocated to the recreational side of things. It's just not. Mm-hmm. It's economics 101. And I see that being a five-year projection before it starts to take a turn.
Okay.
I really feel that Trump and company made a mistake with the tariff thing. I think that...
don't get me started about tariffs.
I think that...
We're talking about guns.
They're related.
Sadly.
I think that that if you're going to do the tariff thing, that he needed to first open up all of the... what do they call it? The crescent. Get all of Asia on board with... low tariffs, and then slam the Chinese with high tariffs and build. Well, as a for instance, Europe is getting still to this day a large percentage of their natural gas from Russia.
From Russia.
While they're in a tacit war with Russia, And the United States could solve that by simply generating huge amounts of natural gas and sending it to Europe at a really good price and undercutting the Russians. Same in India. India is supplying the Russians with finances by buying their oil. Well, we need to undercut that. That's the solution there. Tariffs on everybody isn't a solution. Yes, it's made us some money, but it's not targeted properly, in my opinion. And as far as the firearms industry is concerned and the outlook for the near future, I think that small players are going to play a big role. I think that medium players are in trouble because the small guys who are doing it out of their basement, the guys who are putting together innovative, creative stuff, and that's what we're here for,
right?
Is small, innovative, creative stuff that we all want. That's cool. I want to see that. I want to use that. I want that. You know, I want to write about that. I want to tell people about this stuff. Those companies, those innovative companies, they're going to go somewhere. The middle guys, the big guys, they've got the bucks that they can hold out. They can weather the storm. They can, you know, throw and put it in a different color and put it out again and call it right? a new model.
That's not a new model. Color is not a new model.
Yeah. And, but it's those middle guys, those middle manufacturers who built up during the boom times that are going to be really challenged going forward. And so, you know, I'm very big on entrepreneurs. I'm very big on innovation. And the old companies aren't innovating right now for the most part. I think that the Ruger Magpul meld for whatever they call that gun, I think that's a gem. I think that that's great. I predicted 20 years ago that modular firearm mechanisms in cheap plastic frames was where the future of handguns was going.
So you'll be very happy to know I have one here.
They're moving forward with that. That's finally coming true 20 years later. But yeah, that's where I see it, is I think that we're going to struggle for the next few years, hopefully for the next 8 to 12 years or more, and because people aren't afraid as they were, although the Democrats keep trying to gin up that fear, they keep trying to do things to make us more worried, and I wish they would stop, but I don't see that they're going to.
They won't because they're effective at it.
Yeah.
They won't.
It's what they know how to do and what they do well. But anyway, that's where I think we are right now, state of the industry. And it comes to you, Howie.
All right. So as we talk about the state of the industry, sometimes we talk about how it looks nationwide. But in Colorado, I can tell you that background checks since Senate Bill 003 was passed, the background checks that have been reported by CBI are through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
I will tell you, Jared Polis and his little lackey, Tom Sullivan, are two of the greatest gun salesmen in the state because since they passed that, basically the semi-auto ban, yep, or what we call Polis's permission slip, to buy a semi-automatic gun with a detachable magazine, gun sales of those particular type of firearms have gone through the roof. So when we talk about the state of the industry, how it's down here and it's down there, I can tell you that gun sales in Colorado are not hurting.
Well, everybody in Colorado is rich anyway, so.
That's right. Just look at me. I drive a Raptor.
That's right. So there you have it.
Can't hide money, can you, Jeff?
I have a 2009 Town and Country minivan, buddy, out there in that parking lot.
So that's my vintage.
My other truck.
That's going to become a classic here soon.
My other truck is a 2003 S10, okay?
All right. Well, my other truck is a 1987 El Camino, so.
Yeah. As a firearms instructor, Jason, where do you see it coming in?
It has been kind of nuts.
Oh, who cares what Jason thinks?
I tell you what, on the instruction side, it's slowed down the first part of the year. And then we started seeing the assassination attempts, and then we saw Charlie Kirk's assassination. And my phone and my email have been nonstop since, because while people, they've got the stuff, they're realizing, look, I don't know what to do. So oddly enough, the training has been picking up in the last month.
That's good.
So
don't leave that shirt laying around there, Jeff. I'm going to steal
somebody will
that.
Steal it.
It won't fit you. My wife just got it for me.
Fat man in the little shirt. I'll wear it.
Charlie Kirk shirt.
It won't be the same when you
get
it back.
It'll be like Winnie the Pooh.
Sorry, folks. We're getting distracted here.
No, we're good. The bourbon's kicking in, and I think it's time to go mingle for the rest of the evening. So until next week, guys, I think we're just going to blame the left on this one.
That's right.
That's right.
Crazy freaking commies.